My name is Jim Scanlon. I'm a lawyer in Washington, D.C. I don't have any relationships to disclose. My presentation has two subjects. The first is the problem with standard measures of differences between rates, including relative differences, absolute differences, and odds ratios. And that problem is that all exhibit patterns of correlation with overall prevalence. That is, among other things, they tend to change as overall prevalence changes. Second subject is an alternative approach that avoids the problem with standard measures. That is, a measure that does not change as overall prevalence changes. My abstract talks of two measures, two approaches, but I'll only briefly address one of them, one or the other in greater length. Because my topic is somewhat complicated, I give the references up front. So on my website, there's a Measuring Health Disparities page that has about 90 references explaining the points I make here in various settings. It also has a Solutions tab, which explains the solution that I'm going to propose here, and the Solutions Database tab, which allows you to download a database to implement that solution. I also have a Scanlon's Rule page. Someone in the UK recently started referring to one of the things I described as Scanlon's Rule, and I'm very happy with that. So I have a page now explaining the nuances of the rule and hoping that I hope that it answers any questions you might have, but if you have any other questions unanswered there, you can just email me. Then there are a few references to a couple of important articles or presentations, including last year's AFA presentation. Okay, the patterns by which binary measures tend to change as the overall prevalence of an outcome changes, Scanlon's rules. First is that the rarer an outcome, the greater tends to be the relative difference in rates of experiencing it, and the smaller tends to be the relative difference in rates of avoiding it. Rule two, as an outcome changes in overall prevalence, the odds ratio tends to change in the same direction as the larger of the two relative differences, and the absolute difference tends to change in the same direction as the smaller of the two relative differences, where numerators are reversed on the two risk ratios. And if that's at all confusing, I try to answer it on the semantic issues page. Now I'm going to illustrate these patterns. Think of this chart here as being based on test scores of two groups who differ on their averages by half a standard deviation, with the figures at the bottom being used for reference being the success rate of the advantaged group. And we notice as we move from left to right and success becomes more common, the relative difference in experiencing its success tends to decline, the relative difference as what I term ratio one here. Thus, you lower cutoff, you reduce relative differences in pass rates. Now we look at the other side of the picture, the adverse outcome. And the brown line now shows the ratio of the failure rate of the disadvantaged group to that of the advantaged group. And as we move from left to right, and success becomes more common and failure becomes rarer, the relative difference in failure rates tends to increase. Thus, do we observe the way relative differences in experiencing an outcome and relative differences in avoiding an outcome tend to be changed systematically in opposite directions as the overall prevalence of an outcome changes. The next figure adds the odds ratio. It starts out large, gets smaller, reaching a low point at the intersection of the two ratios I just mentioned, then increases as we move farther to the right side of the figure. I'm going quickly over these because I've explained these tendencies many times, and the more important issue is the solution to the problem. I've added here now the absolute difference, which is on a different scale, so I have broken up the chart, and we see that the absolute difference behaves in exactly the opposite manner of the odds ratio. So, That's the problem, is that each of these measures tends to change as overall prevalence changes. And in order to find whether something has changed over time in a meaningful sense, we have to have a measure that does not change simply when overall prevalence changes, in order that we know that when it does change, it indicates something meaningful. Now, these figures are based on the same data underlying the earlier figures, and we see the advantage group rate and the disadvantage group rates at 4 points in time. That's up at the top. And the favorable outcome is increasing over this four time frame period. Then at the bottom, we see these various measures and how they change over time, with the ratio 1 always decreasing, ratio 2 always increasing, and the odds ratio and absolute difference showing more complicated patterns. And I could describe how various groups of researchers, how NCHS, AHRQ, Harvard Medical School would, looking at these data, reach contrary conclusions about whether a disparity is increasing or decreasing. Then I have the figure at the bottom, the EES, which stands for estimated effect size. And it is constant over time. Now, it's meaningless here because I derived this EES figure from the figures up above, the 40% and the 23%. But it's meaningless here because that's a tautology. That's how I got the earlier figures in the first place. But this nevertheless gives us an intimation of a way to deal with the issue. And what I call the estimated effect size is the difference between means of hypothesized underlying distributions of risks of experiencing an outcome in terms of percentage of a standard deviation, assuming normality of the distributions. Table 2 is a simplified version of Table 1, but I've altered the figure slightly for year 2. And looking down at the bottom, we see that the various ratios and odds ratios, those four measures, they all changed exactly as they did before. But we can see from the EES that it has declined to 0.47. Thus, we can conclude that in a meaningful way, year two disparity is smaller than the year one disparity. This is just to give a little bit of perspective, and I call it the illustration of the meaning of various ratios at different prevalence levels. I highlight the 2.0 ratio, and it just shows basically that 40% versus 20% is a much bigger disparity than 1.0% versus 0.5%. It's the same 2-to-1 ratio, but the EES illustrates what I think is really intuitively obvious, that the former disparity is much larger than the latter disparity. Now, this is an illustration based on a study of the way a school entry vaccination requirement changed the differences in black and white rates of hepatitis B vaccination. If you look at the white rate in year one was 8%, black rate 3%, white rate went up to 46%, the black rate went up to 33%. Now, focusing on what I call the favorable ratio in the fourth from last column, the authors concluded this was a dramatic decline in the disparity at 2.67 to 1.39. Also for the ninth graders, that's down below. But we look at the adverse ratio, the failure to be vaccinated, 1.05 increased to 1.24. Now, the National Center for Health Statistics insists on relying on the adverse ratio. So whereas these authors concluded that there was a dramatic decline in disparity, NCHS would conclude that there was a dramatic increase in the disparity. The absolute difference, say, which Harvard Medical School research group typically relies on, they would conclude that the disparity increased. Similar patterns down below, except Harvard would conclude that the disparity declined. So I have over in the EES column the procedure my approach to determining which is the largest disparity. And we see that the disparities decline from 0.47 to 0.34, 0.37 to 0.5x. This is another illustration. All of this will be posted on my website, so I'll just say, encourage you to look at it on the website. The Escarce comment, there's a lengthy comment explaining it, but why different people will reach different conclusions, and that the only sound conclusion has to be based on the EES, which is in the last column. This is another one that, again, there's a lengthy discussion of this. I used this at the AFRA conference last year just to show that HRQ would say, has cited this study by Segal as showing how improving health reduces disparities, improving adequate hemodialysis reduces disparities, but Segal relied on the absolute difference, finding it to decline from 0.10 to 0.03. HRQ would say, well, it increased from 1.19 to 1.23, as would National Center for Health Statistics. But I think the EES is the one that tells you the true story. I also have some similar illustrations called supplementary tables at the conclusion of this that you can also go through. And I hope that going through them, you'll gradually say, well, this really does make sense. Moreover, really that it is the only thing that really makes sense. Problems with the solution. This is not a perfect solution to the problem. There are always practical issues. We do not really know the shape of the underlying distributions. And there are sometimes more fundamental issues where we know that the distributions are not normal because they are truncated portions of larger distributions. And if you click on either of those highlighted references, you'll get larger, more elaborate explanations of that point. There's also what I call an absolute minimum issue, and again, these references will explain it. The conclusion. Well, if we are mindful of the problems, the approach provides the framework for cautiously appraising the size of differences between rates. Whatever its flaws, it gives us a starting point for trying to appraise the meaning of the size of it, comparing the size of a difference in two different settings. And regardless of the problems, the approach is superior to reliance on standard binary measures of differences between rates, without regard to the way those measures tend to be correlated with the overall prevalence of an outcome. And the fact is that almost all health disparities research to date disregards the role of all overall prevalence in the changes in various measures over time. And in consequence of that, very little research on health disparities that has endeavored to measure change over time or to compare the size of disparity in one setting with the size of disparity in another setting has been of any real value, and much of the time it has been quite misleading. So if you are going to do health disparities research, I suggest you review this carefully, and I don't pretend that I have the perfect solution to the problem, but I have the framework, what I think is the framework to perhaps the best solution that we can come up with. Do I have 1 minute which to entertain questions, if there are any?
And we'll have a time for questions at the end also. Does anybody have a quick question?
Question. Are you able to compute standard errors and compute confidence intervals and hypothesis tests? Because just looking at two numbers, you can't tell whether they're really statistically different.
No, I do not. Some people are working on that. Some people have contacted me with that very issue and are interested in that. I myself worry that since there's so much, speculation involved in coming out with my figures in the first place, that the additional speculation with regard to confidence intervals, but others say, well, there's always going to be that assumption about what's underneath. So others are thinking about that, but I should say that I don't really have a formula for implementing this. I have created this database sort of mechanically from published data on normal distributions and sizes under the curve here and there, and But I say download it and play with it and see its strengths and weaknesses.
Okay, we'll save the other questions for later. Our second presentation is by Desiree Getze, and it's Take Down These Fences, Dissolving Borders in the Heartland Using GIS.
Next presentation. Can you move?